This is John Floridus. Welcome to Musician Spotlight. Our guest today is Hilary Hahn. This is John Floridus. Welcome to Musician Spotlight. I'm very pleased to welcome to the program Hilary Hahn. How are you doing, Hilary?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you so much for taking time to speak with us today. We're speaking by phone with Hilary and recording this on the 1st of May in 2014. And Hilary's calling from Hamilton, Montana, a little bit of an unusual situation in the sense that normally if an artist is in the state, I'm there interviewing them in person. But just in terms of our schedules, this is how it worked out. And as we are recording this in early May, she is in the state as part of the Bitterroot Performing Arts Series. Hilary will be familiar certainly to classical music fans as well as all music fans, a world-traveling violinist, a two-time Grammy winner, and also featured on an Oscar-nominated soundtrack for The Village, among many, many other accolades. By the time that we air this, you will have come and gone to Montana, but perhaps you'll already be planning your return. I say that just having spoken to you a little bit before we started the interview, but just about how much you're enjoying some of the things that come along with visiting Montana for a performance.
Yeah, I first had this experience up in the mountains in Colorado, and I've just kind of been seeking it ever since. And every place has a different set of sounds. What I love about this area, from what I've been able to experience so far, is just being in an area with like a forested section of property where you don't hear much from people. And so you get this silence where if you're indoors or if you're outdoors, it's the same sound. You open the window, you don't have suddenly a lot of noise that floods the room, and you can hear the birds that are here. You can hear the birds that are a little further away. You can hear the insects. You can hear such a depth of sound. It's fantastic. And, of course, my favorite thing is hearing from a very still environment, hearing from a distance that the evergreens, they start to pick up the sound of the wind, and it's kind of a rumble. It's different from how wind sounds where I'm from on the East Coast, where you have a lot of leaves rubbing together. There's just something about how it travels here. It's this sort of rumble, and it comes over you, and then you hear what direction it's going. It's the most magical thing.
Hillary, I wanted to start the interview by just talking about this recent project, your most recent recording project, and not just any recent recording project. This is a pretty fascinating concept. I really wanted to delve into this a little bit and get your take on how this project came together and just kind of give folks a description of what all was entailed.
Yeah, it's a big project for me. I've been working on it for quite a while now, like probably a little bit more than a decade since I had the first idea. And the idea came about because I had noticed that there were a lot of encore collections that people were performing and recording and publishing. And these pieces were, they're considered encores, but an encore really only is about when the piece is played. It doesn't mean that the piece is written for this particular place in the program. It just means that it's often played in that particular part of the program. So the encore is what you play afterwards if the audience keeps applauding. And initially, of course, the word encore means again, but now we don't really repeat. We don't tend to repeat things from the program because now we have recordings. So people have other chances to hear these pieces outside of the concert hall. Back in the day when the word encore was used and people actually repeated something, it was because that was the audience's chance to hear it again, like hit repeat.
Mm-hmm,
so that's
sure.
what they did. Now it means basically play us something that is not on the program that we don't expect that will wrap up the program really well for us.
Mm-hmm, yeah, sure.
And a lot of the pieces that are most popular to be played as encores are pieces that people have been enjoying hearing in the encore slot of a program for about a century now. So thinking about all of this, seeing these collections of older encores appear, I just wondered what current day composers would do with the same spot of the program. So I started listening to a lot of music by contemporary composers, and I listened to find music that really spoke to me for some reason. I wasn't listening for a certain kind of music. I was just looking for that reaction that I had. Then I just started cold calling people, and I didn't have an A list and a B list. I just figured a certain number of people would be interested and a certain number of people wouldn't. So I just called everyone, and eventually almost everyone was interested and committed to doing the project. And that's how I wound up with 26. I had always intended to have one of the pieces be a contest because I knew that listening to all the music that I could find would still not cover everything that's out there. So I just wanted to have an open contest. That was what I did for the final encore of the project, which brought the number to 27. Thank you.
I love the analogy that you made in, I think it was one of the videos that you have on YouTube about this project, where approaching these composers, and just to make sure listeners understand, you're commissioning these pieces. In other words, you're approaching these folks to write something for you.
Yeah.
And I loved your analogy. It was like asking someone for a date.
Yes. You're calling them and you just don't want to dial the number because you're not sure how it's going to go. And you're thinking, how am I going to ask them to be involved in this? And yeah, it was nerve-wracking because these were people I'd never met before. Mm-hmm. Only two of the composers on the project are people I have worked on pieces with in the past, where I'd worked on new music that they'd written for me. And it was really interesting because I just assumed that some people would be asking, huh, what do you mean? I don't know if I like this idea, you know, sell it to me.
Yeah.
But I didn't really get that reaction from anyone. People were very open to hearing the idea and talking about how they might approach it, and I really wanted to leave it free for the composers to have the most expression possible. So my only parameters were between 1.5 and 5 minutes as you write the music. You should aim for that, and then for acoustic violin and piano, because a lot of them have a lot of experience in electronics, in pre-recorded music and in mixing that with acoustic instruments, which I think is great. But I wanted to take these pieces on the road and to be reliant on the sound system in each venue and the extra technological factors that would play into the performance. It was just too many things to be able to prepare for in the course of a normal tour. So I wanted to keep it as simple as possible and also make it as possible for everyone else who might be interested in playing the pieces at some point to take them on.
I'm going to reference again this video you had on YouTube that describes the 27 encores. And this question, though it comes from that, could be applied to a lot of different things, I think, in general. The concept of, you know, you've commissioned these pieces from all these different composers, and that learning them was like learning a different language with each composer. So I wanted to ask if you could expound on that a little bit.
Sure. For example, it would be like the punctuation in a sentence.
If you choose
to do a semicolon, or you think about how different authors write, you know, some write these really long run-on sentences and you have to get your brain to a place where that makes sense. And other people write really short sentences, and so you think about the meaning of that as you read it, and it affects how the music how the words reach your frame of reference for meaning. And as a performer, it's kind of the same thing with music. The notes are like the words. And so how people emphasize certain notes in their writing and how they choose to string them together and where they choose to end their musical sentences, to end the phrases, is something you have to identify in order to get into. And when I played something by someone whose music I already had played, I already knew how to get to that point. So it was really more about that particular piece in that instance. How do I make this piece come across to the audience? Something people don't realize with music that's already written is how much improvisation is still happening. It's just the improvisation isn't necessarily the pitches of the notes, but everything that's written on the page is relative. So
yeah.
Basically notation is telling you this note is approximately this much longer than this note, and this one is approximately this much higher or lower than that one. But even pitch can be subject to interpretation. And so every little thing that you can do when you speak to bring emphasis to a sentence, you can do in music. You can go faster, slower, louder, softer. You can kind of change the tonal quality. And so there are just so many ways to bring meaning across. You have to figure that out as a performer. Thank you.
This is John Floridis, and you're listening to Musician's Spotlight. I'm speaking by phone today with Hilary Hahn. I often ask musicians what some of their other interests are, and just a quick glance at your Twitter account, or I should say your Violin Cases Twitter account, and I want to come back to that concept because I think that's very interesting. You have some very healthy outlets with yoga and dance and Zumba and stargazing. So I guess the first part of that is... talk a little bit more about some of these other things that it seems like you have a lot of outside interests to kind of keep your life pretty well-rounded in the midst of an incredibly busy life as a musician.
I've always had a lot of interests, and it's a matter of finding a way to balance all of that out. And I've found that, of course, I have to know what I'm focusing on at any given time, mm-hmm. or else I try to do everything. But with music, you have time when you're practicing, but then your brain keeps working on it when you're not actually playing the instrument. You actually stop and listen to what's in your head. You realize it's continuing to practice for you, even when you can't hear it yourself. It's still there. You just tune it out. And as a result, if you're always competing with your own thoughts to constantly work on the same thing, at least for me, I find that really exhausting, and it's helpful for me to do something else. Also, playing the violin is very, this sounds funny, but it's very athletic. It's pretty physical.
Sure. And, of course.
Not only just because you're holding your hands up, but you're moving around, you're playing for, well, right now I'm on a recital tour, so each recital finishes about 2 hours after it began with an intermission in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that time you're on your feet and you have to stay focused mentally. You have to keep your energy levels up. So not only is it the thing that you're actually playing that is drawing your physical energy, but also the endurance of the experience and the level of adrenaline that you maintain for a long time in the course of any concert. So I find it's really helpful to sort of cross-train with something else that's physical. And also because violin is asymmetrical, I try to do things for fun that are full-body workouts or that involve dance, because I feel like music is very tied to dance. And I took ballet for a number of years, so I really relate to motion in a sort of a dance context. And that helps me work on my coordination and just have fun moving around, and I can take all of that into my playing as well. But some of it is just, you know, you just want to try something because it's fun.
Sure,
so
sure,
do
of course.
It.
Well, I want to come back to the concept of your Twitter account is your violin case. It's like Hillary's violin case.
Yes, violin and, case writes the Twitter account.
Right,
violin
right.
Case's opinions, violin case's observations.
I love this. Now, I don't want to get too psychoanalytical about it, but I'm just curious. Do you think that engaging Twitter, you know, the Twitter universe, the Twitterverse, as they say, as your violin case, does it make it easier for you to share some things about yourself with your fans? In other words, to get a little bit of distance, because it's so easy to get caught up in yourself because you're constantly putting yourself out there. Is there, I'm just kind of curious as to, you know, where that comes from, because it seems like that could be a really fun, but also kind of healthy thing to take on.
Well, I think that for me, it's just a little boring to read about what someone is thinking and doing from their perspective all the time. Like, really, like, are you writing that because you think it's interesting or because you have to write something and that's what you're writing? Or, but then also it's very tricky to have a forum in which you talk about everything else. And, you know, a Twitter, like text messaging basically, is not the place to explain all of your thoughts. So, but that's just me. I mean, some people manage to do it extremely concisely, and it's just not how I am. But I've always liked being creative, and I don't want to take any credit away from Violin Case having Violin Case's own outlet. In a way, it's funny because, you know, I'm always with the Violin Case, and I feel like to assume that everything around me has the same ideas that I have is a little selfish. So I think it's fun, you know, what is Violin Case thinking right now? And also, Violin Case shares things about me that I actually wouldn't share because I wouldn't particularly find them interesting, but perhaps Violin Case thinks other people would find it interesting.
I see.
So then Violin Case can share all of that. Thank you.
This is John Floridus, and you're listening to Musician's Spotlight. We're speaking today with Hilary Hahn. HilaryHahn.com is the name of the website. I'm going to spell your name for our listeners, HilaryHahn.com. And as we've mentioned today in the interview, she's very active in social networking and engaging folks who are familiar with her work and who are just coming to her work through that medium, as well as simply through performing and recording, which you do a considerable amount of work in that, and superb work it is. It's a real treat to have you on the show and get a chance to talk shop with you, Hilary, and hope we get a chance to talk again down the road.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
This is John Floridus. You've been listening to Musician's Spotlight. Our guest today has been Hilary Hahn. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org. You can also contact us through our own website, musicianspotlight.org, as well as through Facebook. Our program is now available as a podcast from those websites, as well as from iTunes. Special thanks today to the Bitterroot Performing Arts Series. Musician Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.